This is CliffCentral.com. Animal Central on CliffCentral.com.
Hello and welcome to Animal Central on CliffCentral.com. This is the only show in South Africa that is dedicated to animals and the people that love them. I'm your host Ainsley Hay and I'm back again this week and I've got some really important guests on today. We're hitting quite hard with this show. I think it's a topic that needs to be discussed fully. I think it's being sugarcoated in some in some ways and really underestimated. So the topic of today's show is the drought that is happening in our beautiful country, and I am joined today by Dr. Anya du Plessis, who's a senior lecturer in the Department of Geography at UNISA.
Hi, Ainsley. Thank you very much.
Hello. Welcome to the show. I'm very glad that you can come and join. I think, again, I'm getting quite bold with who I'm approaching for the show. I think before it always used to be animal people, but I'm branching out because geography and the drought and the weather affects our animals.
Yeah, everything is interconnected at the end of the day.
Exactly.
So looking forward to the chat.
No, I think it's going to be very important. And then weighing in from the animal side, obviously, because this is an animal show after all, is our dear Dr. Clint Austin from Bayer Animal Health.
Nice to see you again, Ainsley.
It's been a while.
How are you doing?
Good. You've been all over the show, haven't you?
All over the show.
Where have you been? You've been excited.
Since we
places.
Last spoke, Swaziland, and the drought is hitting Swaziland particularly hard.
Really?
I've also been to Germany for some conferences and down in Hermanus for a little bit of a break with some dear friends of mine. So back at the grindstone.
Oh, as we all are. So, Anya, I want you to explain to our listeners your position on the current drought facing South Africa.
I think the current conditions in terms of the drought speak for itself. Animals are suffering, people are suffering in all communities. Voluntary organizations have been started now to send through water to wherever. I mean, I can't even keep track of where all the water is going.
Yeah.
So that's very encouraging. But the current stance of the drought, it is bad. We can't sugarcoat it anymore at this point in time. It's a very bad situation that needs very much attention from government, municipalities, as well as the usual common people as well.
Yeah. And how much warning was there that this was coming? Was it, how long has it been? I mean, because obviously weather patterns and all of that and all you clever people that look at all this sort of stuff.
In terms of warnings, I mean, the El Nino occurs irregularly. So sometimes every 3 years, sometimes even 7 years.
Just explain exactly what El Nino is.
Okay, El Nino is a weather phenomenon. Okay. Basically, the warming of the ocean temperatures, central and eastern central, through the equatorial Pacific area.
Okay.
So close to Brazil. Okay. And basically, that then affects your weather patterns. What happens is with El Nino, it gets drier.
Okay.
Your air temperatures are hotter, and then that affects your rainfall patterns.
Mm.
So in some cases, like Southern Africa, we are experiencing a drought.
Okay.
California in the US, they've been hard hit as well.
Yes.
Brazil, Sao Paulo also has been hard hit. But then the eastern parts of Africa have actually benefited from this in terms of they're getting more rainfall.
Okay.
So usually El Nino is followed by La Nina.
Okay.
Which basically then increases your rainfall. But currently we're stuck in the El Nino phase.
And how long does El Nino phase last for?
Well, it depends on how strong it is. I think they're estimating that this will carry on until August this year, maybe March. I mean, the data is a bit sketchy. It's very difficult to predict these things. So, yes, maybe March we might find that we're getting a lot more rainfall.
Okay.
Luckily, we receive rainfall now in January.
Yes.
So it has eased a bit for some areas.
But it's still not enough because, I mean, as you and I were just having a chat outside, we both were lucky enough to just go to the Kruger recently.
Yes, yes.
I got back on Monday and, I mean, it's the bush obviously is not looking as good, but it is greener because we have had the recent rain. But the water table is just so low. I mean, the Crocodile River was...
It was like a sandbag.
Exactly. You
know, I was there in December, middle December. I was lucky to experience the heat wave. 46 degrees. It was absolutely awesome. So, you had to stick to the water holes. That's where the animals are establishing themselves at this point. If you go in middle Kruger, maybe at the Malalaan gate, you're not seeing a lot. So, except for the impalas and
the usual
the zebras or whatever.
The usual suspects.
Yes.
Now, were there any steps or actions that could have been taken to mitigate this disaster?
I don't think you could have mitigated the disaster. You could have decreased the impacts of it significantly.
Okay.
And we have to remember that this is a drought, yes, but previously we have also experienced droughts.
Yes.
This drought is exacerbated by your hottest year on record. So we've experienced very high temperatures.
Oh.
So that's exacerbated the situation. But then also South Africa, unfortunately, our infrastructure is outdated. It hasn't been maintained. Mm. So you have non-revenue water of 37%, which is above average for developing countries,
sure,
and for according to the World Bank or whatever.
Okay.
So in terms of that, it's a multifaceted problem, and it's going to carry on if we don't make changes.
So yet again, this is another instance of our government failing our people and our animals.
The government, we have to remember that this is the worst drought within 30 years. The new government only came into the scene in 1994. So they haven't actually experienced it. They don't have experience in handling this drought. And it's a natural disaster,
true,
which they don't know how to handle. They're pumping in lots of water, giving... water, but as well as finances,
okay,
for farmers. But in some instances, they don't know how to give the money to the farmers.
True.
So even though you can say in the news, listen, we're giving so many million rand, is the money actually going to the affected farmers? I don't know.
Oh, it's definitely quite a complex topic. So Clint, obviously, there's many effects on animals. Which animals would you say are most severely affected during times of drought?
Looking at our agricultural economy, obviously your production animals, so we're talking about cattle,
yes,
sheep, grazing animals,
okay,
are going to be worst affected by the drought, because when there's no rain, there's no grazing.
True.
And we really come out of two or three hard seasons in a row, and you come out of a hard winter and there's no rain to stimulate new growth. You know, there's already no grazing winter. You come into summer where there's no new growth and there's no new grazing. There has been a little bit of rain recently, but it's almost too little too late.
Yeah.
And what then happens is farmers need to start buying in feed to feed their animals, and it's incredibly expensive.
It is.
And it has an absolute knock-on effect on everything.
Mm.
If you look at the feedlot industry, which are heavily dependent on maize, the moment our maize crop goes, the maize prices go up, the feedlotting industry suffers,
okay,
and then your price of meat starts to go up. So it's really, it's such an interconnected web of effects.
Mm.
But hard hit, I mean, anyone who's gone down to the Cape over, and even down to KwaZulu-Natal over December would have seen the effects of the drought.
Yeah.
It's practically a disaster zone.
And it's
From about Parys, from the Vaal River onwards.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Karoo always looks dry, but it looks particularly bad this year. Everywhere you drive was absolutely completely overgrazed. There's no grazing left. The farmers' boreholes have dried up.
Oh.
So, you know, feed is one thing, you can buy that in, but if you've got no water,
what do you do?
That becomes a little problem. And if you see what's been happening recently on an unprecedented, when in your lifetime have you seen pictures of 30 trucks carrying feed and water to specific areas of the country? That has never happened.
Yeah.
Look, and that's quite heartwarming. I mean, people pulling together and really making a plan to help people that are suffering. So no grazing affects our production animals, but you need to understand in communities where there's no water, your companion animals are going to get hit as well.
Exactly.
There's no water. If there's no water for humans to drink, there's no water for dogs to drink.
Exactly.
And that compounds the problem.
Oh, it's really, and I mean, I've never, you know, I was born in KZN, I come from there, I've never heard of KZN being dry like that.
Well, I mentioned I was in Swaziland in December, and particularly the middle and the low veld, it is absolutely terrible. There are just dead and dying cattle, the place smells of dying animals.
Gosh.
And there we sit with a particular situation. You need to distinguish between a commercial farmer and a communal farmer where cattle... they're wealth cattle, so not commercial cattle. So you can come into a commercial farm and say, listen, we've got a really hard season coming up and you need to start depopulating. You need to start depopulating because the carrying capacity of your land is down. If you go to a communal farmer whose wealth is cattle or
it's
his wealth, you cannot tell him to slaughter out half his herd. He's not going to do it.
Exactly.
And as a result, these animals are literally dying of starvation. They're dying next to the road. They're dying in the fields. Swaziland is taking a pounding.
Oh, that's absolutely dreadful. And, you know, again, a huge burden falls onto the animal welfare organizations as well when it comes to these farmers who haven't been able to care for their herds. Oh,
correct. And it's not a farmer being negligent. He just exactly. simply can't. There's nothing he can
exactly. do. Exactly. I mean, you can't prepare for something like this, especially, no. you know, it's one thing having a bit of a tight season, but when you don't have water or food, I mean, it beggars belief. I can't imagine. I don't think any of our listeners, you can't really understand what it's like.
I've heard something recently of people, you know, wanting to keep their grass clippings and send that for food.
Yeah, that's a new initiative.
It is a new initiative. I'd like to just sort of put a little bit of caution out there. You take moist grass clippings, put them in a bag in the heat, and you're going to grow mold very quickly.
Yep.
And that can make animals very, very sick.
Typical vet and vet nurse. That's the first thing that I thought.
So it's a great initiative, but you know, that fodder needs to be dried. And needs to be very, very
but I think they've warned people regarding that, where they give them instruction on how to to give the grass to them, to tell them to scatter out the grass, make sure that it's dry, and then bag it again, and then give it to them. So I think if people stick to those guidelines, it should be fine. But I think the initiators need to obviously check these things very carefully as well.
Yeah. So listeners, would really love to hear from you, because you know this drought affects absolutely still every single person in this country, even though you may still have water and you may have a green lawn, which is not okay. please do get hold of us on cliffcentral.com. Our number is 0861 555 189. Our Twitter also is at cliffcentral.com. Facebook, Cliff Central, WeChat, ID is Cliff Central. To send us a message, you just tap connect and then message to show. So, Clint, how long can an animal survive without water?
Pretty much the same as humans, a few days.
Really?
Yeah, unless you're talking about animals that are specifically adapted.
Desert adapted
animals. And the same rules apply. Okay. I mean, you can go without food for probably a good few weeks.
Yeah.
You're not going to be in good state afterwards. Yes. But water, 2-3 days, and you're done for.
And even things, I mean, like the ruminant animals, a lot of your production animals are ruminant, am I correct? It depends on water to function, which is their way of digesting food.
It does. When there's not enough moisture in the rumen, I mean, the ingester just can't be mixed. It's not moist enough. And remember, the water in the digestive tract acts as a medium for all those digestive reactions, for your digestive enzymes to occur. And so it places tremendous metabolic stress on these animals. And what that's going to do, the first thing it does is affect your production figures.
Okay.
Remember, cattle farming sheep is all about producing offspring and livestock. Now, you metabolically stress an animal, their natural physiological response is going to be to
reduce production.
Well, reduce production, because energy needs to go into the production of a fetus or production of milk to feed a calf and that kind of thing. So that's the first thing that suffers.
Yeah.
You know, after that, you know, the muscles start wasting away. You know, everything else starts shutting down after that. But the first thing to go is reproductive ability. And that's a natural survival adaptation.
Yes. Oh, it's definitely not a good way to go. Quite dreadful. So, and yet, do you think South Africans were warned enough about this disaster? You say that there were warnings enough. Do you think it was put across to the right people effectively?
I don't think so. Farmers obviously were warned to say that, listen, we're going into an El Nino phase.
Yeah.
Previously, the El Nino wasn't this strong. Mm-hmm. So most people didn't take it on very seriously. They still planted their crops. Okay. And I mean, it's survival, it's money at the end of the day as well. But in terms of the people, I don't think we were warned enough.
Yeah.
I think that the drought hasn't been taken seriously. Mm. By the government, and then also some people as well. I still see people taking the hose pipe, washing their pavements,
washing the car, hosing it down.
It's stuff like that. I mean, like, at the end of the day, you're going to have to change your behavior.
Exactly.
You're not affecting just yourself.
Yeah.
You're affecting other people as well.
Yeah.
A very good example would be the people in the Northwest. They've experienced a drought for the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They've been sitting without water. Municipalities aren't helping them. It's stuff like that. That's kept on the down low that most people don't know about. It's only coming out now where people say, yeah, but we haven't had water for the past 2 years or whatever. Senekal is a very good example as well. Even though the municipalities have taken steps by giving them water tankers, people are complaining that the water is dirty.
Oh, gosh.
Children are getting diarrhea. And we know that children are especially susceptible to these illnesses and can pass away. away. So it's a serious situation. That's where grateful. Then luckily the volunteers have taken water to these areas, and this is now a lifeline for them. Sometimes they sit without water for 2 days minimum, and then obviously that affects your animals as well. Where does the animals get water from?
Exactly.
So we need to take this seriously. It's not just a thing that's going to pass by. It's going to have long lasting effects in terms of the economy, in terms of the farmers. All sectors are going to be affected.
So I'd love for you to speak more about that, because I mean, yes, we may be having rain now, and yes, we may be getting some rain, but there's a big kick still coming from this that I don't think people realize.
I think we're already feeling it. Your food prices are going to increase at the end of the day. Farmers aren't producing as much as they do. Also, the red meat market prices might decrease because there's an overload in red meat. Because we have to slaughter the animals. So it's going to have long-lasting effects, and it's going to hit the consumers' pockets at the end of the day.
But I mean, even now, I couldn't believe it. I bought 4 grapefruit the other day, and it was 80 rand.
Yeah.
80 rand for 4 grapefruit?
Yeah. I need to back on you up there. I mean, this is going to threaten South Africa's food security.
Yeah.
And you need to remember, the farmers have come out of 2 or 3 hard seasons. They are out of credit. The banks are not going to give them any more credit. So what's going to happen is a lot of these guys are going to sell up. They're going to fold and sell up. Or they're not just not going to have money to repopulate again afterwards. So this is going to threaten South Africa's food security. Bearing it's not just the livestock. I mean, I'm talking from an animal point of view. You look at our maize production and our wheat production. That's been hit really hard by this drought, where we've always been a net exporter of maize. We're now a net importer, which drives the prices through the roof.
Exactly. You know, inflation and the economy and everything, regardless to this food
disaster.
And
if we are importing maize and paying in dollars, and we know what's happened to the rand-dollar exchange rate recently, that also becomes rather problematic.
We're in for big...
Start saving money.
Yeah, exactly. Groot kakkers, as they say in the Northwest, I'm
sure.
Did she
just say that on radio?
I didn't hear
anything. Internet radio.
Oh, okay. So
I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, the rules are different.
Wonderful.
Luckily for me. So when was the last time that we had such a serious drought?
30 years ago. So it's been, as I said, it's the first time that this government is experiencing something like this. In some cases, they don't have the skills to handle this. That's the sad part. So that's why I say it's very encouraging that people are coming together. And you know,
out of their own.
Yes, out of their own, and trying to do something about this. We can't sit and wait for municipalities to do something or the government. We've waited now for how long for infrastructure, etc., to be upgraded. Especially sewage. I mean, sewage is a major problem in this country. So you have two problems. You have the availability of water that's decreasing.
Yes.
We need to remember that South Africa is a water scarce country. So, you know, we're always going to have that problem. But then also, we're also having this problem of water quality problems. Where sewage works as a mine drainage. You know, it's ridiculous
so
at
that's,
this point.
So that's polluting our very limited...
That's
our
polluting the water, and then obviously that decreases the available water that you have because you can't use it. So we need to look at both. And presently people are only focusing on the available water, but we need to think about the water quality as well.
Exactly. Oi. What a task. So we've discussed a bit about this, but sort of what are the long-term and the short-term effects of such a drought? Is there anything that we've missed on that, or have we sort of covered all of that?
I think we've covered the major parts.
Yeah.
I think time will tell. Presently in this country, things are going up and down. You never know what's around the corner. So I think we've covered most of the things that we know that we can sort of predict from previous times. But as I said, within this country, and you never know.
Yeah. Look, at the end of the day, water affects everything. Affects animals, affects our crops. I'd like to maybe ask Anya, and maybe it's out of the blue, since it's always been an interesting question for me, is this, they've been talking about cloud seeding for ages.
You know,
that to
but
me has always been
cloud
absolutely...
seeding to our
well,
listeners.
I'm going to leave that up to our expert. Okay. It's always been a fascinating topic for me. Nobody ever seems
Cliff
to have got it right.
Yeah, I can see this. Yeah. In terms of cloud seeding, that's why I'm going to dodge this question a bit.
Well, first time, someone explain what is cloud seeding.
It's basically, if I can like talk from the top of my head, it should be like they deposit stuff inside into the atmosphere.
Okay.
Particles or something. And then obviously your water within the atmosphere condenses around these particles, and then it forms clouds and rain. But yeah, that is still in the testing.
Very much so, but it's pretty interesting.
And who's doing most of the testing?
I don't know. I thought our expert would, but I've thrown it apparently.
Unfortunately, that's not my research area. But I can find out for you.
That's fascinating. So making fake clouds. Because I've always thought of that. Like, we figured out how to make so many other things except for water. I mean, we can make electricity and all sorts of things, but not water.
Yeah. No, they're currently focusing, obviously, on rainwater harvesting. It works when it rains.
That's very important.
Unfortunately, it hasn't been raining. Yeah. So that's point number one. They're also focusing on desalinization.
Yes.
But that's obviously on the coast.
And that's removing the salt from seawater.
Yes. So you're creating water in that sense. So Israel is a very good example of this, where they've basically, first of all, they've gone down into reducing all leaks.
Okay.
Israel is a water scarce country like South Africa. They've then, after that, implemented desalinization. So increasing their water availability. But together with that, they've also focused heavily on changing people's behaviors regarding water. As I said, we can fix leaks as much as we want. We can implement desalinization plants, so whatever we want. But at the end of the day, if you're still standing with your house pipe outside your house.
Middle of the day.
Like having a nice shower outside with your house pipe. I don't know what people do. It's not going to help the situation.
We are a water scarce country, and sooner or later we're going to have to start behaving like we're living in a water scarce country.
And we haven't particularly.
And again, I mean, I keep coming out of the animal production side, but particularly producing beef is a very water intensive industry. But it can be done, and it can be done smarter. There are smarter ways to do it. We just need to become a little bit more responsible with our water resources.
So a way of doing that, would that be farming with indigenous beef cattle as opposed to...
Not necessarily. It's right through the chain from beginning to end. Okay. It's just being smarter with our water use and just being a little bit more responsive. You know, everybody's got a borehole, or at least farmers have got a borehole, and that borehole, I would say, in some instances, can get treated as this unlimited resource. And we've seen now how many boreholes in what Afrikaans, what they call spulpunte, have just totally dried up. And everything has been sort of, the guys have been okay. They're managing until their last borehole dries up. And then everything absolutely implodes on that farm. Because not only have you now got no grazing, you've no water for your animals either.
So do we have water power? I'm going back to I'm going back to my geography days, I think, or something in school. Because there is a way of creating electricity from water, am I correct?
Yeah, currently.
Do we use that in South Africa?
Not really.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yes. Okay. Currently, Eskom is busy with the Ingula pump storage scheme.
Okay.
It's located close to Harrismith and Ladysmith. So what they've done there is basically there was a couple of rivers flowing there, built a dam at the bottom, built a dam at the top, and then obviously you generate electricity through the turbines.
Okay.
So it is an option. You can do it.
But not the best in a water scarce country.
It's not recommended. Currently, most of the power stations are wet cooled, basically water intensive to cool down the operations. But Eskom has now, with Medupi as well as Kusile, whenever that's going to finish one day, they've now implemented dry cooled. So they're not using water as much. So people are trying. But whether it's enough, I don't know.
Yeah, no, but that's good, because I mean you don't think of that, but there is there's water used in your electricity to very important resources in the average human and animal's life nowadays.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, they are talking about the next phase in the Lesotho Highlands Water Project.
Yeah.
I don't know how much you know about that.
They're wanting to get another dam.
That's correct.
From Lesotho to pump more water to South Africa. But then again, you know, you are dependent on another country for your water. And whether that's going to maybe lead to conflicts in future, I don't know. They're talking about water conflicts.
Could happen.
There's water conflicts within Sao Paulo, Brazil, where people are fighting for water.
Sure.
I mean, they've got major water restrictions there, and I mean, that's just one example. You also have small water conflicts within California, where because of the inequality there, rich people are still, you know,
watering
as much. Their gardens are green, and then, you know, you come to the regular people and they start complaining and saying, but, you know. But and then the rich people blame the people at the end of the day for using too much water.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to see what's happening in terms of social
populations. No, but that's a very valid point. My mom lives in California, and I visited there 2 years ago for the first time, and I'd heard. I mean, California's been in a drought for how many years?
3 years.
Yeah, a hectic drought. But then I got there, and I was like, but everything's so green.
Yes,
there's perfectly manicured lawns, all these beautiful green palm trees, even though they're good, their water's sensible plants. But yeah, and it's true. But we'll chat about that after the break. So listeners, please do get hold of us. Send us a message on WeChat, tap connect, and then message to the show. We're going to have a little music break, and then I've got another guest joining us after the music.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today, which is why we have partnered with the Leadership Platform to nurture leaders who are committed to growing our country's economy. We are proud to say it's an initiative that's already showing glittering results. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
So that was an appropriate song for the drought. I hope we all bless the rains down in Africa. That was by Toto. So we have a very special guest on Skype all the way from another drought-stricken area, actually California in America. Anne, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Hi, Anne. I'm very well, thanks. Glad to have you on the show.
Thank you. Actually, I'm in George right now because I'm
really?
Here for my reason.
Okay.
Well, they are having a terrible drought in California, and it's true what you said. They don't act like it.
That's it's shocking. So this is Anne Heiser, who has started an amazing project to get involved to help save the survivors of rhino poaching in South Africa. And do you want to tell us a little bit about your project?
Sure. A little while back, they had a campaign on social media where you would write "Stop killing rhinos" with a hashtag on your hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, let me get a little creative, and I asked somebody if they wouldn't mind putting some calligraphy on my arm or something like that. And so I had a friend who offered to do it with me. She wanted to do it with me, and I got a photographer and a body painter to come and do this.
Oh.
It took on a life of its own.
Really?
Yeah, literally he came with his stencils and airbrushing and everything. And by the time I looked again, I had this amazing piece of artwork on my body, and so did my friend.
Oh,
these awesome pictures. And we held, okay, so we didn't have clothes on, but we held signs that say "stop killing rhinos, rhino the horn is not medicine," and so on, in front of ourselves, so that we didn't show anything.
Okay.
But we clearly don't have any clothes on. And then we decided to do something more with it because it came out really so great. So we ended up deciding to do a calendar. But unfortunately, for personal reasons, my other friend had to pull out. So I'm sitting there with these photos that we had to Photoshop her out of.
Oh, dear.
And I asked all of my wildlife photographer friends, because I belong to all these amazing groups on Facebook, if they wouldn't mind giving me some rhinos so that I could combine them together.
Yes.
So I just want to quickly tell you that the following people gave me rhinos, and they just gave me anything. They said, yeah, you go, pick whichever one you want, go ahead and use it. Rob Berg, Ayesha Cantor, Nobby Natalie Clark, Ike Placonoris is an old friend of mine.
Oh, wonderful.
And my niece also painted a painting that I put on.
Sweet.
So I ended up with all these, you know, this combination. Now, everybody did it pro bono.
Oh,
nobody charged me. I did have to pay for the printing in the States.
Okay.
But when I came here and I had them printed here, Nippy Print in Ilovo just totally sponsored the printing.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I didn't have to do any math, which I really appreciated. But what I did was I organized events where mm-hmm. people could come and, you know, just enjoy some food with me at restaurants that I used to work at, one in San Diego, and of mm-hmm. course the Gino's in Robertsham, where I used to work many years ago for about 7 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
Gino's been going for 30 years, and he opened his restaurant on a Monday for me and just put on pizzas and sangria, and we all got together.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yep, and we did it again in Stellenbosch last Sunday. And totally, I mean, I've almost raised 7,000 rand just by doing this at those two venues.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic and some well-deserved applause. Sure. And so you literally just out of the kindness of your heart saw a need. Obviously, you we can hear that you're South African, but yes. You say you live in America now.
Yes, I do. I live in San Diego.
Oh, wow. How long have you been there for?
Hey, about over 25 years, and it's so funny because people think I just got off the boat.
Good. I'm glad to hear that you're still keeping your accent. But I'm sure you miss home bitterly, and you must be very happy to be home.
I am, and I'm right here in Georgia with my favorite brother.
Oh, that's amazing. What's the weather like down there?
It's actually gorgeous.
Oh,
really, really beautiful.
I can imagine. Now, where does the funds raised that you raise go to, Anne?
They go to the organization Saving the Survivors.
Fantastic.
That are dealing with Hope, the rhino that's
yes.
had its face chopped off. So I really, you know, I wanted to make sure that before I take anybody's money, I know where the money's going. And that's why I actually made the trip out here. So, you know, also because I missed home so much, I haven't been home in 2 years, but I came on my own dime and I got really great ticket prices. Of course, the dollar's great, but
yeah.
You know, if you don't have a lot of dollars, even if the exchange rate's great, still, you know. But it was just a fabulous opportunity for me to do this. And I'm so excited because it really has taken on a life of its own.
Oh, that's absolutely fantastic. So where can our listeners get hold of the calendar from or attend any of your events? Where can they check up on that?
Okay, well, right now, Nippy Print in Ilovo is going to be putting up a link on their site where people can order the calendar. As soon as I get back to Joburg, I'm going to quickly meet with them before I leave out on Sunday night.
Okay.
Back to San Diego. And then I will also make them available. I think Gino's in Robertsham has a few. Gino's in Stellenbosch has a few. You can buy straight from them. But I've been doing them on consignment, so I don't...
Okay.
You know, they just print them as we need them.
That's clever. And can you get them to South Africans or is it mainly Americans?
No, I have them, you know, people can buy them off my actual website in the States. And I've just actually got an order last night come through while
Yay.
I was sitting watching TV. But yes, you can get them here from Nippy Print. And I want to vlog these things all year long because honestly, Nobby Clark's photograph in December is worth the whole calendar. I mean, it's just stunning photographs of rhinos. And what a great combination. Now, I just want to quickly note that I have actually put out a challenge.
Uh-huh.
So it's called the Rhino Awareness Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for you to tastefully and creatively express what any or all of the hashtags mean to you on social media platforms that are available to you.
Okay.
So instead of dumping a stupid, wasteful bucket of iced water over your head,
mm-hmm.
make a sign, do a dance, you know, sing a song, whatever you want to do, but raise awareness.
That's
about
brilliant.
And you know, I have a collective statement of intent because of course everybody's going to make their own, you know, why you're doing something.
So
I made sure that was clear.
Good.
And it's really about raising awareness, raising funds, providing moral support for those people on the front lines.
That's important.
Efficient distribution of donations. And maintaining the effort, you know, and just keep on, you know, because sometimes people get a little frazzled.
Yes,
fatigued, and they're like, oh, I'm so sick of hearing
exactly.
about it. But you can't get like that.
Exactly. Well, Anne, I salute you for the amazing work that you're doing. I think if everyone did what they could, the world would be a far better place. So thank you so much. And I'm really thrilled to have had you on the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Enjoy South Africa and safe flights back to the States, eh?
Oh, well, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, listeners, so that's the amazing Anne Heiser. And please do go and check up on the links that she mentioned there to see how you can get your calendar. That was taken with the camera. So please get hold of us on WeChat. I'm going back into our discussion regarding the drought now with Dr. Anya Duplessis and Dr. Clint Austin. So, Anya, you mentioned the Northwest. What other areas are most affected by this drought and possibly still? Because I know that it's been waxing and waning and KZN started off and now...
Currently, Northwest, as mm-hmm. I said, but then Limpopo province as well.
Okay.
Limpopo province has also always been a dry province,
yes.
But now with the drought, it's very bad there as well. Mpumalanga, I don't know how the rain has affected that area. As you said, when you were there,
yes.
and I was there in middle December, the Crocodile River looked like a sandbank.
Yeah.
So in those areas... I've also read an article lately regarding a statement from the Kruger saying that the animals there are in trouble. So
okay.
I don't know whether Clint can maybe say something about that.
Well, again, I mean, you've got a lot of wildlife in a very confined space there.
Mm.
And no rain, wildlife mm-hmm. confined, they can't migrate, they can't move
exactly.
away. So, I mean, you would have been in Kruger, you would have seen how
yeah.
the area between the brush
yeah.
and the thorn scrub is totally overgrown. There's no grass
yeah.
left. And then even the browsers are struggling. You know, and when times like this are tough, particularly your thorn trees, acacias, they produce a lot of tannins.
Yes.
That can lead to issues later as well. So, I mean, I can imagine Kruger would be badly. I was in Kruger in, I think it was late, was it November or was it December? You know, with the project we're busy with the rhino dogs there. And it was looking very dry. And same
okay.
story again there.
Mm.
I mean, rivers down to a trickle. Uh-huh. Some of the rivers totally and totally dry.
Awful.
So the whole country is battling, really.
Yeah.
And if we're talking animals, we're talking about wildlife. We're talking about cattle. We're talking about sheep.
Yeah.
We're talking about all of them. We all get affected by a shortage
yeah, and
of
I mean,
water.
Even birds. I mean, you know, we've got migratory wading birds, water birds and all that. And they base their whole lives around water. And with the low water levels, it's great for waders, but not so good for some of the other water species.
And you can imagine from a conservation point of view, and culling and depopulating herds is, I mean, it makes logical sense of conservation, but it's not always terribly desirable when it comes to the general public at large. You know, it doesn't go down well. But at the end of the day, you need to do what you have to do to
exactly.
ensure the long-term sustainability
exactly.
of the, of
and
the
what's,
whole area.
And what's worse, leaving an animal to starve or dehydrate to death?
Right.
Or
look, the Kruger has
shot.
Always had a policy of non-intervention.
Yes.
I mean, they want to leave it as natural
no,
as possible.
No, that's only recent.
It's sure.
Recent.
But I mean, particularly in times of drought like this, and the
yeah.
elephants cause absolute havoc
yeah.
in the areas where they are.
But it's interesting. There's been an interesting paper, studies that have been done that shows that with managing elephant populations on reserves, as long as you don't artificially provide water, you actually get some internal regulatory things going on with the herds. But that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother day. But now, Clint, I want to hear a bit more. You mentioned some rhino projects that you're involved with.
Yeah, you know, as Bayer Animal Health, we, as it being an animal health company, this is, you know, very close to our hearts. And we were looking for some unique ways to get involved and not just throw money at the problem where we've got not a huge amount of control over what happens at the end. So one of our most successful projects to date has been getting involved with what we fondly term the rhino dogs
yes.
in Kruger National Park. So these are packs of dogs that are kept at various points in the park, but they are used directly in anti-poaching
oh,
activities.
Wow.
So these are specially trained dogs. They cost the government a huge amount of money to bring them in, train them up, house them.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can imagine these dogs are used in tracking. They train to work off lead. They are trained to track poachers, track baby orphans
wow.
whose mothers have been killed.
Wow.
These dogs are absolutely amazing. They fly in helicopters. They
wow.
are in crates on the back of cars. They are trained to work completely off lead.
Oh, wow.
So the handler and the ranger can have both hands on his firearm. And you can imagine when you've pumped that much time and money into developing this highly trained, highly specialized animal, and it contracts tick bite fever and dies. It's a bit of a problem because they're really out in the middle of nowhere in the Kruger. I mean, there's no cell phone signal.
Tick paradise.
It's completely inaccessible. They work through under some very, very harsh conditions. And not just from a tick and flea point of view. I mean, we've had stories there of dogs running into a pack of lions and a pack of hyenas.
It'll happen.
And we had tail amputations. And you can imagine, I mean, this dog just runs straight through a pack of sleeping lions.
Oh.
It causes absolute pandemonium because they're generally quite a way ahead of their handlers.
Okay.
So Bayer Animal Health has pledged to support these dogs in all their parasiticides, external and internal parasiticides. We pay for the incidental veterinary costs.
Oh, wow.
One of the things we are, which we're very excited about, is the use of the Seresto collar there. As you know, it's 8 months protection against tick and flea, and that's absolutely ideal for these dogs that are out in the field and with no sort of, so we say, quick access to to veterinary care. But also remember that Bayer is a life sciences company. So we're not just about animal health, we're about human health as well. And as such, you know, we've donated huge amounts of multivitamins to the handlers to keep them healthy.
Brilliant.
Our environmental science division has come in with life nets, which are insecticide impregnated mosquito nets
for
the rangers, as well as Betacol aerosol clothing spray to keep the ticks off the handlers.
Yeah, so it's really
been
too.
Exactly, and it's really been a combined effort from Bayer in South Africa to support the dogs and support the people who are on the front lines and fighting rhino poaching.
Thank you, Bayer. That's awesome. I think what you mentioned, it's so important to make sure that if you where you're putting your money, it's actually going to good use, because I think unfortunately we've got quite a few opportunists in this country that have jumped on bandwagons, such as the rhino thing. And
it has become, it's a massive thing. And we were talking in the break about, you know, why aren't the other species being focused on and why the rhino? But you remember, the rhino is one of the big five. It's on the face of any kind of conservation. The rhinos were on the endangered list for how long?
Yeah.
Correct. And we fought so hard to bring them back from the brink of extinction, and now we're back there again. It's
and now elephants are going to be joining in.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that is why it has become this huge, I don't want to say it's a money spinner. A lot of the stuff is going for good causes, but I don't know that it's regulated enough.
Yeah.
There's a lot of smaller, more dodgy players out there that you would absolutely no idea if your money's actually getting to where it needs to go.
Exactly.
One of the more impressive organizations we've worked with as well is the Rhino Orphanage. Now you can look them up on Facebook, just search the Rhino Orphanage. They don't publicize their location for obvious reasons, but if you are looking to support
a bona fide
non-profit organization that is doing good work, look for the Rhino Orphanage on Facebook. Bayer at the end of last year donated 100,000 rand for them to build an intensive care unit for baby rhinos. So
that's
guys
fantastic.
Get baby rhinos that have been orphaned because their mothers have either been killed or shot or poached, and these baby rhinos come in, they're absolutely dehydrated, they're nervous, they're anxious. So and they've already got really impressive facilities, but what we wanted there was an absolutely perfect dedicated building that will ensure round-the-clock monitoring these baby rhinos when they come in until they're stable enough to be put out, you know, with other rhinos and to make friends with them. And I'd like to encourage anybody listening, if you're looking for a worthy cause, look up the Rhino Orphanage on Facebook.
That's brilliant. That's fantastic. It's heartwarming to hear that there are positives that you can focus on, because I think we all have such compassion fatigue. The massacre of our rhinos has been in the news for so long now, and I think as the average South African, sometimes you just feel a bit hopeless, and you know, what can we do? And this is a very simple way of helping, and it's so good to know that organizations such as Bayer are standing up, manning up, and assisting. So I salute you, Bayer. Well done. But now back to our drought conversation. So I want to play a little game. We're going to go around the table. So every one of us is going to have to give an easy way that the average South African can take one action to stop wasting water. And we're going to bounce around until we run out. Okay? So I'm going to go first. So, turn off your tap when you're brushing your teeth.
Well done.
Okay?
Clint. No, that doesn't count.
That was way too easy.
No, I started it. I get to hit with the easy one.
Don't wash your car with a hose pipe.
Yes. Good job.
And I'll hammer on the hose pipe thing. Don't wash your pavement or driveway with hose pipes.
Use a broom. Yes.
There you go.
Do not water your garden during the day. If you have to water it in the evening.
Or early morning.
Yes.
Do I get half a point for that?
No, my point.
Because you went out of 10.
Oh. My point.
So I'm fired.
Yes.
Sorry.
You're in the naughty corner.
Harvest rainwater, especially to fill your pool.
Definitely.
Half a point because it's not raining.
Anya?
Yeah, shame on you. You can also use grey water from your dishwasher and so on
to water your garden. Oh, no, now I don't feel so smart because now I'm having to pull at straws here. So another way is put a brick in the cistern of your toilet.
Very good.
Teach your kids to be responsible with water.
Ah, from the father in the group, yes.
You can start a water monitoring project.
What is that?
Where schools can complete water auditing in their schools itself. So then obviously you give different grades an area which they have to monitor, and then if there's a leak, they obviously fix it. So that's practical things that we might
And you just gave me my answer.
There you go.
Fix all leaks.
Yes.
Fix all leaks of water. If you see a leak, fix it. And don't ignore it because there's a problem. Have you ever noticed if you walk by a leaking tap, you stop seeing it? If you don't fix it, you stop seeing that there's a leaking tap if it's left for long enough.
No, that kind of bugs me out. My DIY personality wants to fix those things.
No, it happens. When I did inspections at captive animal facilities, it would happen all the time. I'd go there, I'd do an inspection, I'd say, you've got a leaking tap, you've got to fix it. Oh, yeah. I'd come back a month later, you haven't fixed the tap. And I start jumping up and down. Oh, no, we didn't see it.
That's true, actually, because we do community engagement projects in the Northwest, and we also do water auditing there. Mm. And then you would also like go to them and say, okay, listen, we're going to go from one communal tap to the next. Mm-hmm. This tap is leaking.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, okay. A couple of months later, you go back again. Have you fixed the tap? Oh, no, we haven't. No, we haven't realized it's still leaking. Yeah. So, yeah, no, good on that.
Mm-hmm. Clint?
Is it me again?
Yes.
It can't be me again.
It is you. It is you. Do you want me to help you out?
No, that's not fair.
Okay.
When did you start running the show?
You threw a curveball at me.
Revenge is sweet.
This is payback.
This is for your pseudo clouds.
Well, how about being at work? Because that's where we spend most of our days in Monday to Friday. So if you see a tap that's dripping or leaking, either report it or close it.
That's take ownership of it, even though it's not yours.
Well done.
Well done.
That's very good. You can take a shower instead of a bath.
Yes.
But don't shower for 20 minutes because then that's going to be counterproductive.
Short showers.
Yes.
Okay, me, if it's mellow, let it yellow.
Very good.
I put that the wrong way around.
No.
If it's mellow, let it
yellow.
If it's yellow.
Yellow.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry, it's been a long day. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down.
And on that note, can we stop playing this game now?
Should we stop on that note? Okay.
How about stop doing the ice bucket challenge?
Yes. Well said.
Don't do such things.
Complete waste of water. Mm. Very well said. So I think, South Africans, you have a lot of pointers now that you can very easily follow. And it's up to all of us. We all need to do our bit to help with the water, because even though you've got water in your taps, it doesn't mean that other people do. And also, I want to salute and shout out to every single person who has donated water. I had the lovely ladies from Kailami who've done their initiative on the other day, and just it's so heartwarming to see average South Africans contributing and helping. That is what makes our country great, and we must carry on with that. So just closing out, Anya, I just want to know a bit about your position at UNISA and your sort of career to date, to put you under the spotlight.
Well, I'm a senior lecturer there. Mm-hmm. I've been at UNISA for the past 5 years now. Okay. It's very long. We involved, obviously my research is based on water quality, especially the Vol. Mm. My PhD was on that.
Okay.
Focusing on water quality and land cover, trying to build equations to say that, okay, if this percentage of land cover changes, how is this going to affect your water quality at the end of the day? So I worked with Randwater on that, and they're doing a good job, I think. Okay. And then also we are involved with community engagement. So we work with communities presently in the Northwest regarding obviously the water, but then also we do environmental awareness and so on. So what we're trying to do is basically to change people's behaviors, make them more aware. So that's how we give back to the communities.
Brilliant. That is absolutely awesome. Well, I want to thank both of the doctors in the room. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and I think we've really got down to the base of this hideous drought that's happening. So thank you both for joining me.
Thank you
very much.
Nice seeing you again.
Yeah, and Clint will be back, no doubt. I want to get you back to speak about this rhino thing more often, so you've been forewarned. But yeah, listeners, I will be back next week. Keep well.
Animal Central on CliffCentral.com.